Buckle up, you beauties, because we're about to dive deep into the world of all things hockey.
Pigeon!
A greasy pigeon isn't just any old bird. It's a message. It's letting the other guy know exactly where they stand. And it is not meant to be friendly.
You guys are sensitive over there.
And now, from the Pigeon's Nest, your hosts, Jeff Sullivan and Kevin Trussler. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Greasy Pigeon Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jeff Sullivan, and just like every other day of the week, I am joined by that beauty of a guy, Kevin Trussler. Kevin, say what up to the people.
What up, people? Good to see
you. Good to see you, too. And for those of you watching on our YouTube page, you can see that we have a little bit of a different setup today. We are at the Trussler Family Vacation up in Ontario, north of the border. We got Johnny Dad. What's up, Johnny? Chris, how's the older job? Brother, and Trevor, the younger brother, and Kevin in the middle. Gentlemen, welcome to the nest, man.
Good. Thanks for having us.
Kev, what is going on up there, man?
Buddy, you know, this is where it all began. This is where the magic happened, Jeff. You know, in this basement, this is where dreams were made and broken at the same time.
Maybe how often do you have to go back up there just to look at pictures on the wall the last time you had any real talent?
Not enough, Jeff. Not enough.
So there's three photos behind you, and there's three brothers on the couch. So you all played hockey, and we have a goalie. We have two skaters. Show of hands, who went the furthest in the sport? Who played at the highest level amongst the three of you?
Maybe this guy.
Trevor did. Trevor, what was your highest level? Kind of walk us through what your youth to junior to whatever your pathway was.
Yeah, no, I started here in Beamsville. I think it was a double B market. Yeah. And then moved to AAA in St. Catharines, which is a town about 30 minutes east of us. And then played a few years of junior. Was drafted to the OHL, to the Kitchener Rangers. And then tried to go scholarship route. I was a Band-Aid, so always injured, so could not stay healthy. But yeah, I'd say like junior, and then I played CIS, so Canadian University here. And that's where the career fell apart, and here I am.
So did you have any like real impactful, serviceable time with the Rangers, or was that just when you were kind of injured and you're on and off the hook nonstop?
Yeah, I injured myself going into training camp. I went out to tutor training camps, but then we wanted to go NCAA route. Unfortunately, when I played out in Saskatchewan for my last 2 years of junior, pursuing
with the
Weyburn Red Wings. Shout out to Dwight McMillan.
Still smoking in the locker room, in the dressing room.
Legendary coach here in Canada. But I ended up taking a clapper in the mouth in Humboldt, of all places, and lost my scholarship opportunity there, and then just went the CIS route. It was a good time, though, overall.
Good time overall, unfortunate ending. You know, could have put something together, and you know, now it's the what ifs as opposed to the what was, and that's unfortunate. But those stories are often told, because at that, hockey's the only sport where you have to grind it out all the way up. Unless you're the top 1%, it's not handed to you, right? We know basketball, football, even baseball, the path is sometimes a lot easier for players to make it to a semi-professional level, and hockey's just a grind, the bus trips and the miles and whatever. Pops, what was it like kind of watching Trevor go through that, you know, get to a point of his career where he thought maybe things were going to start taking off, and then, you know, obviously the opposite happened?
Well, back then, we would listen to his games on the internet. And the night that he got hurt, we were listening to the game and heard that he got pretty banged up. So it was a pretty hard time for us. Sorry about that. But, you know, it was pretty challenging for him. And he tried his best, and you came back in the new year, right?
Yeah.
After that, and it was
with a better grill and a slimmer jaw.
Yeah. Kevin's wedding photos. So I snapped my jaw. It was about October. November. And that Kevin got married in December. And I had the jaw wired shut. I was about 20 pounds lighter just because I was on a soup diet. And for Kevin's wedding, I look like Skeletor, for God's sakes, in your photos. But probably for the best, because it kept my mouth shut there for most of it. But no, it happens. And it was good. Hey, great run. No regrets and the good times.
Absolutely. And Kevin, where were you and Chris during, when Trevor was going through this? Let's start with Chris. Where were you? Were you still in the sport? Were you, being older, were you already done and kind of moved on to the family life? What were you up to around the same time that all that was going down?
My journey was done.
But you got drafted invited to EO.
I had a tryout at with the Sudbury Wolves, the junior A team up north, and that was a good experience. Came back, played with the Grimsby Peach Kings. They burned me out one season. Saw about 495,000 shots.
Your brother was a defenseman on that team, right?
Hey, you know what?
I didn't see Kevin's the front of his jersey once. I saw the back of his jersey a lot.
Looking for the outlet pass.
Love to post up at the blue line, KT, for that outlet.
Kevin had a good snow at the face-off after fishing the puck out of my net. So, but no, honestly, there's 5 years between Trevor and I, so definitely, he's going through his thing. I was at that point. I like to just say that I think the NHL really missed out on three really good opportunities, but but that's for another conversation.
The Stalls have nothing on the thruster, just so you know. I'll pump your tires, man. I mean, you played junior. You were the go-to guy. You're the old guy, right?
I also won the Vezina Trophy in the Jordan Oldtimers League.
Nice key.
That was pretty good. No, all in all, it was good. You'd like to say that, you go back and try to do a few things different, but unfortunately, it's this kind of learn as you go kind of process. Unlike Trevor, I remained healthy until. Today, I'm a mess today.
But no, Chris, what was
at
your?
At the end of the day, it's a great experience. We all got to play a higher level. Made a lot of friends.
Well, at the end of the day, man, it's all about how far do you want to go? And quite frankly, I think T-Bird's body gave out on him. I know we've talked about it offline when we've coached together, and. You're only as good as one, what your body will give, and then also how much you want to give to the sport.
Sure. And I want to get into a little side conversation of the Peach Kings, because to our listeners, that is not a new team name that has come up. Kevin gave us his 141-3 story already.
34-1, Jeff.
Thank you. Sorry.
The one win and tie were in October. So,
But Chris, as a goalie parent myself, who's my son's currently going through the junior route in the U.S., I'm curious what your style was back then, right? It's a constant evolution, and the sport has evolved. Where did you fall in the era that you played? Was it the stand up, leg save sort of flashy jump around and react to everything? Or were you starting to see some of the new teachings and trainings that were coming in?
I think you hit it on the head at the start there when you said fall.
He would two pad jam very nicely.
Being 6'4", I was always a bigger goalie than really what was out there. You're now starting to see, 6'6", 6'8", whatever is out there. I would say I was more of a hybrid in the sense where definitely more stand-up, but then, when I played when I was younger, we didn't have the fancy pads that, flipped up when you went down in the butterfly style. That came to me later, in my Vezina days in Jordan Oldtimers. But I stayed in that butterfly style for about three periods. So it was, but definitely.
Low shots. Do not shoot low on Chris. It ain't going in down there.
Low on me. You could usually entice me with, like, some banana bread or maybe some cookies. I would chase those to the corner.
Later on.
But at the end of the day, yeah, I was kind of in that era where there was a lot of transition. If you were small, then you were butterfly style. And a guy my size, we were definitely more stand-up Kenny Dryden kind of look.
Anyway. Solid glove, but great stick handler. Passer.
Mm.
Yeah,
the third defenseman, Akev.
Hey, he's the reason why I always preach to the goalies as I coach. I'm like, it's a disservice to your team if you can't fire the puck up to me, especially when I'm behind the D cherry picking.
Okay, yeah,
Jeff,
absolutely.
I'm not gonna lie, I've buzzed the tower a few times on my D men. They quickly learned that they didn't need to skate all the way back. So it was something that I practiced. I think it's huge. You see it even, you know, in the NHL now that the goalies are giving their defensemen a chance to put themselves in a better position for breakouts. And don't get me wrong, I love firing it, you know, 20 feet in the air to center ice and send in a forward. That's nice. I've also been burned where I've passed it to the other team nobody was covering me. So.
Absolutely. So let's go back to Kevin letting you down playing for the Peach Kings over and over again. What how many years, Kev, did you guys spend on the same team together? Was it just a one and done, or did you overlap a few?
It was a one and done there. Yeah, I played two or three more years after that, you know.
And that interaction.
It was part of the rebuild, bud. Part of
yeah,
the rebuild.
Yeah, well, yeah. Big it was a hell of a rebuild.
Year after year.
Minus 147 after your 3 years there up in Peach Kings.
One season, maybe.
But what was that like playing with, you know, having Chris on the team, the older brother, you know, as the goalie, right? That's typically looked at as the leader on the team, right? Now you're the young defenseman that, you know, the team's struggling. So it's falling on the D to make that up. How's that going?
Here's the irony on that, right? Because I know you've said I played D in men's league. Trev was actually the D growing up. I was a forward the whole time, but a very two-way playing forward. Great on the dot. I knew having him behind there, I know that he could steal games. I mean, yeah, he's seeing a lot of rubber. He's getting his money's worth, you know?
I've only ever known you as a defenseman. I had no idea that you were a forward in your younger days.
He
used to ride his stick. Like, he had some pretty classy moves back in the day. his fighting career, on the other hand, was questionable, but...
I won a couple.
Yeah.
He could dump the puck in with the best of them, though, I'm telling
you. Yeah, the dump and chase game was A+, Trev?
Oh, buddy, I'm telling you, there's no better look than this guy coming in, quick little dash down, dump it.
In your corner, and I'm going to... Go for a change.
That sounds like driveway hockey.
Yeah. Oh, that's a story there.
Something tells me, though, sitting there in the back, Trevor's just shaking his head that he could absolutely skate circles around both of you on any given day. I just get that vibe.
Well, he could beat us up, that's for sure. But not when he was younger. Not when he was younger. I've got his younger boys sitting there. We used to put the leather to him every now and then.
That's why he's tough.
That's right. That's right.
That's awesome. So, curious, right? Three of you, you're all relatively close in age. You're playing, you know, whether it's driveway hockey, you're playing wiffle ball in the backyard, basketball, who knows, right? You guys, a family of boys, I'm sure everything was a sport and a competition when you guys were younger.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, not today, who was the best athlete in your family, you know, growing up, those teenage years? You know, I know you went through them at different times, right? But like, who was the best just all around, could grab a ball, could grab a stick or whatever and make something out of it?
Co-host of this show, bud. 100.
I think when you break it all down, I think we're all three of us are in the same type of thing. It just, you know,
it's very Canadian when you say it.
Somebody is stronger.
I'll go American.
In baseball. Somebody stronger in golf. Somebody stronger in hockey. I can tell you, two of the three of us were definitely a lot stronger in as umpires.
It's 100% false, right there. I was the best umpire in the league for sure. Feel free to tell the story, bud. Feel free. Trevor?
So, Jeff, I'll tell you right now. Little League Strawberry Festival here in Beamsville. Big tournaments. And championship game, I'm pitching. And I got these two.
Don't know why you got the mound.
I got these two beauties as the umpires for the game.
And sounds like conflict of interest right out of the gate, eh?
I'm telling you, buddy. There's a lot of conflict on this one here. So I get KT behind the plate, Chris working the bases, and I just threw missiles down, straight down the pipe. What does KT do? Ball. Looks like And these two are just looking at each other, chuckling the whole time. My coach is slipping a lid, just being like, what the hell's going on here? And I think there was even like Barry House ended up coming out and just being like, guys, like, what the hell's going on here?
Yep. I gave him a warning. I gave him a warning.
Back to the dugout. Yep.
We heard your blue gives you a warning. Get back on in there.
I could never believe that they were allowed that. But yeah, they tipped the game. I think they took a payoff from the other team and they just basically screwed us.
Should have done my flowers the day before. That's how it goes. Deliver those papers for me. It would have been a different story. You know?
No, but like both Kevin and Chris were real good athletes and are good athletes. Well, were good athletes. Call for what it is. They say the camera adds 5 pounds.
I know.
Hey, so I heard phones add 20.
Yeah.
But no, like I think from like Kev was always very natural. You know what they say, as soon as you find the bottle in the ladies, his career went down for shit. And then Big D, like I know Big D, like he battled till the end. But no, both good athletes. So I looked up to them personally from my perspective. So I don't know, between these two, I'll let them fight that one out.
Nice.
Well, it's hard because for baseball, you know, Kevin was more, you know, drag punt, run his ass down the, you know, to get on base. I took the easy route. I hit 400-foot shots and jogged around. It took a lot more camera time.
My uniform was dirty.
Yeah, well, mine would be too if I fell in the outfield as much as you.
But, Kevin, you would just take dirt and just dust it.
He's out there just putting on the knees and the shoulders just to make it look like he was engaged.
That looks like a guy that went 4-for-4.
That's right.
Damn right.
Meanwhile, he's doing the Ichiro, just dragging him on down first base and trying to run it out.
In the summer, what did you end up doing? You blew out your
Achilles.
Blew out your Achilles.
Yeah. So it was 2018, man. To appear all the way to the end, man. You know? And I got a legged out a double with blown out Achilles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Slater. That was amazing. Still third out.
Actually, if you think about it, baseball basically ruined our careers.
It sure did.
I tore my hammy. You blew your Achilles.
Good thing this isn't a baseball show.
We just had this conversation on a previous episode about multi-sport athletes, right? And how we talk about how we want, as hockey coaches, our players to be multi-rounded athletes, see other sports and engage in them. And our guest, MK O'Brien, was talking about how she gave up soccer because of the injury risk and played a less intense sport to still do something else. And then until she kind of got into that high school, prep school age where she realized hockey had to be her 100% focus in order to go to the next level. With what you guys just said, you know, does that kind of make you think twice about it, Kevin, on wanting your players to really play multiple sports?
Always. Yeah. You know, Trev's kids, he's got young boys, 3 boys, right? Ice goes out in the spring and they're playing baseball or soccer, and that's what you need to do. It's, you know, different motor skills, right?
Wayne Gretzky was a huge, huge fan of playing different sports, not playing hockey 365. You know, there's been no proven stats saying that if you play hockey all year round that you're going to be a better player.
I think most of the people in the show play multiple sports. Lacrosse, baseball, soccer, you name it. So,
well, and the best of the best are typically top-end athletes. Anytime they're playing any sport, they're typically the best of the on the golf course or the best on the diamond or whatever. They just seem to – an athlete's an athlete, and we all know the high-end athletes can pretty much do whatever they want, whenever they want. But you risk like that injury.
Like the four you're talking to right now.
Correct. Yes, absolutely. High end. Just own it. Own the show. Speaking of this one going straight to Pops. Johnny, question for you.
You.
Straight up, who was the biggest pain in the ass growing up for you and mommy?
It's your co-host, I'm sorry.
It's all good. You're in the Circle 3 Trust here, Dad.
Did it start?
Not life.
Did it start when he was young, or was he okay for a while, and then became an S head in high school, or was it just the whole time he was just horrible to deal with?
Well, it started in the delivery room, right?
Now it was one October evening.
No, it was actually probably more high school, and after that, but. Yeah, the other two guys, like, you know what? I think they were a little more discreet and were able to hide their
booze.
Their game plan a little bit better. But Kevin always had a trait. We have a side door that has Venetian blinds on it. And like 2-3 in the morning, you hear the side door opened because that's where he always came
after
in.
After doing training and, sessions.
Yeah, it was, yeah. It's working out. Arm pulls. Yeah, he would definitely make a lot of noise coming through the side door. And that lasted for a few years until Kat finally took him off her hands, which was the best thing. No, it really wasn't the best.
Well, I was going to say, did the when you said high school and all that, when it started to, you know, when he started to really act up on you, was that around the time you got the job at Dairy Queen? Because maybe we could tie, you know, yeah. Mrs. Trussler into the downfall of Kevin here.
You know, that you make a valid point, Jeff. That's a question for another podcast with Kat. She was trouble.
Yes.
I agree. Yeah.
1, 2, 3, not it.
Yeah. That's great. No, I feel like when you've got a house full of boys, the age separation allowed kind of a, you know, staggered approach, but it basically allowed you to have go through it once and then go through it again and then go through it a third time, learning each. So the fact that you were the second one to go through it, Kevin, and you still come to mind as the problem, Chris must have been an angel. Growing up.
He sure was, man. He sure was. I paved the way for my younger brother.
Jeff, I'm not going to lie. These wings are feeling tight under the shirt.
And then after you, Kev.
It's a lot of feathers.
And then after you, Kev, Trevor, they didn't even care anymore. Like, just whatever. Just have at it.
Like, yeah. You know what? We don't care. Come and go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We don't have time.
Perfect. Lucky you, Trevor. Lucky you, man.
Oh, is, yeah, he hit the free reins.
Yeah.
No, I got exposed to a lot of stuff at a young age, so I learned what not to do, and thank Kevin for just taking the attention. Keep it up, Kev.
So when you guys were all in the house together, you know, that let's call it that kind of middle school age. You know, I know a little younger, a little older, obviously. In the wintertime, you guys are on the rink. I don't know if there was a sheet in your yard or in the neighborhood or a pond or something like that that you guys did, you know, up there in Ontario. But what were the sports that you guys were playing as a group? You know, was it neighborhood, you know, baseball or wiffle ball, or was it a basket? What were you guys doing when the weather was nice and the off season to get out and stay active?
We used to play a game in the backyard. We called it pitcher and catcher, where, you know, we would self-umpire. So, and we would just be out there throwing hard for like hours, and you know, like our arms would be falling off. We played a lot of road hockey through the summer too.
Yeah,
road hockey, but yeah, baseball was probably the sport number one for growing up, for sure. That was the number one. But you know, I could hit the mitt every time and get strikes, and you know, to this day, you still can't. So it is what it is.
Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. So wiffle ball wasn't a thing?
We used a tennis ball.
Yeah, it was tennis ball, yeah. And we had a park up the street that, you know, we get into some good neighborhood.
We would play against the kids up the street. Yeah. They weren't as good as us, but.
Well, we were faster because we ran uphill and everyone was downhill. Right, that's up right, the street.
That's right. No, but like mom and dad got us. I remember the 1 year we graduated, they got two official size hockey nets.
Yep.
And we would keep them. We live in a cul-de-sac, or my folks do. And they would keep them always out in the circle. So like, it was always like anybody from the street could come down. So road hockey, 12 months a year, was always a big thing. And then baseball, of course, in the summers. And yeah, just
we all played soccer too, but we weren't really into diving. So we didn't play.
Before PK Subban became a thing.
Thank you, PK.
But no, definitely outside a lot. We got kicked outside a lot, and
not let inside.
Yeah,
anything,
yeah. You know. The doors were locked. And we were allowed water and fruit.
Yeah, and, water. From the hose.
From the hose.
A couple saltine crackers out in the front steps.
Yeah.
Good for the afternoon.
You said you were fighting for the neighborhood cat and the bowl that's outside the neighbor's porch.
Shout out Kitty.
Yeah. We had a cat that really shouldn't have shared the same last name as us, but had an 0-36 record against neighborhood cats.
But the important thing is he got up every time. He wanted the show. He fought.
That's funny.
Yeah.
No, we have... my friends and I, we'd stored our equipment at the nearest house to where we would play. We played in the school kind of parking lot area. None of us lived in a street to play kind of outside the house. Right. So we would always meet at the school. So you'd ride your bike with your, and we played roller hockey, right? Talking, yes. Yeah. When was this? 90s, right? For my kind of vintage. You got your roller hockey, your rollerblades in the backpack, you bike to your buddy's house, put your rollerblades on, you put the net up over your shoulder, and there's eight kids, two carrying nets, one carrying sticks, and there's a group of us, you know, rollerblading down the street to go to the school. And we would do that day in and day out. As soon as the snow got far enough off and the first rain washed the sand off so you didn't kill yourself, you were out there, and you were out there basically from as soon as school ended till the streetlights came on. So same idea, and that's where we all see it. Kids don't do the same thing anymore. You know, my son will hit the driveway and I mean, he's a goalie, but he'll still hit the driveway and shoot and mess around with the net a little bit, but nothing like what we all did, where we were outside all the time playing sports and just having fun and effing around without any real structure. You know, it's different now, and it's too bad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, segue into your question right now, because you've got someone that is coaching the younger generation, right? You and I have come up through the ranks, and I know it was different with the kids that we coached, maybe because there were kids not in the neighborhood that played, you know, it was sort of a come and go. I know where we live, we didn't have kids that my kids could go and shoot the puck with or the ball with, but the structured thing is the key, right? Like, it's got to be structured for a lot of the kids, at least during our time, as opposed to just, hey, go to the park, figure it out, and, you know.
That's right.
We'll call you when dinner's ready type of deal.
Absolutely. So, Trevor, you're coaching now. technically, I think, unless Chris is doing something I don't know about, you're the only one left of this group that's still actively coaching youth hockey. Kevin has retired. I was forced out, and now we're into and now we're kind of taking our time off. So, Trevor, first of all, where are you coaching? What level are you coaching? And then what are you seeing with kind of where your kids are today? And then I'm sure I got a few follow-ups after that.
No worries. So I'm only on second, third year of coaching right now. I coached like going into U9.
Okay.
I'd be like single, double A. It's kind of like the age that I'm at right now. We had our first skate today, actually, which was kind of cool. In terms of what I'm seeing, it was a bit eye-opening compared to what I grew up to, like just in terms of we talked about the importance of playing just different sports throughout the year. Once hockey's done, you got to be able to move on. But we are starting to see this obsession of 12 months a year, kids in some sort of hockey camp. So it's a bit of an eye-opener to see the obsession that some parents have and keeping their kids on the ice. And I love the passion, but I think it's important to diversify. I don't know. I think it really what I'm seeing with kids right now, it's going to be really about whether they want it or not. I feel parents want it more than their kids, if that makes sense. So it's going to be important to really listen to the kids and see, hey, like, if you really want this, then let's go for it. But you see some parents really pushing their kids more than what the kids want to be in. And like, I know with my three Rugrats, it's just the importance of just enjoying the game. Like I fell in love playing with these two guys, like the sport. I thought it was a great sport just to go and learn, meet, build relationships, and you build these skills and like just life skills. So that's really what I push, is just the enjoyment and the relationships that you get out of the sport. And as you go, if you love it, let's go for it. But I for me, what I see is a sport that is become very obsessive by parents. I see a sport that is very expensive up here in Canada. I don't know how it is in the States.
It depends if you're a goalie, right, Jeff?
Oh, brother. We've been looking at some new equipment this year for him, chesties and pants and things like that. And I mean, you can spend $800 on a chest protector nowadays, out of the gate.
I might have one for sale for you.
Yeah. We're looking to get away from the newspapers there, bud. So Trevor, ducks fly together, my friend. So we've got...
hey, don't worry. Trevor won't deliver it.
Stay off the paper.
So Trevor, and Kevin knows this, right? So USA Hockey takes an active role right now. Well, they have for a couple of years, right? In trying to grow the game. I forget what the phrase is that USA Hockey uses for the development of the kids and what they're trying to do with them. Is Hockey Canada involved at that level with the youth program, or are you you and your coaching staff just fully up to whatever you want to do with your kids. And therefore it's different between your rink and the rink down the street and the rink in Quebec and the rink, like is Hockey Canada overseeing the youth development or are you on your own?
Yeah. And it's interesting. And I can't like, I only know what I know. I'm still pretty new to the coaching scene, but it is interesting. Like how I think Canada started to take a little bit of the playbook from the States in terms of like skill development, you know, really shrinking the size of the playing, of the ice instead of going full ice, for cutting it down and just more touches and such. But what I found interesting this year is that it is not consistent. Like there's a lot of spin-off leagues that I've seen, a couple of these private leagues that are popping up where instead of following Hockey Canada, they are going to be doing more. It's just, it still follows Hockey Canada rules, but there's just a bit of a different twist on it.
Are they going full sense. Full ice.
They might. Some of these leagues might go full ice. It's the same rules, but it's just like for my little guy that's like, he's going into U9, it's still half ice, 4-on-4, but you know, some of them are full 5-on-5, full ice. So it is different. I'm still learning like the pros and cons of each, but I think it is smart that we are taking a more of a, like an individual skill, like more touches, cutting that playing field in half. So I think it's smart. Hope that answered that.
Well, yeah, and I think we've talked about it, Jeff. The USA Hockey model, the video that they have for the coaches, it, you know, it's a bunch of adults are playing on a lake, right?
Right.
And like nets are, it's not 200 feet. It's, you know, 400. It's a football field.
Right.
And, you know, they interview the players afterwards, and they're like, you know, it was just so, I thought I was in the open, and it's just so far. Well, think about a kid that's, you know, 6 to 10 years old, you know, that, good luck.
Yeah.
You know, and one kid that can skate and the rest of them, you know, are playing catch up. And yeah, that might be good for the
but
one
you
kid.
Guys grew up full ice.
We grew up full ice, but it's, I think you get more because,
no, I think,
hey, the cream rises to the top as it gets into contact, right? And, you know, no one makes it at Adam or Pete. Like, it's when it really starts to play hockey, when there's contact and everything. But you're building skill, building, you know, quick decisions in small spaces is key. If you've got all the time in the world, you know, we've got Sammy was on. You got time and space. Anyone can play in the NHL if you've got time and space. You know, the reality is...
Or smaller nets and bigger equipment. I might have had a career.
That's
also true. But I know when my son was coming up, and I don't know how it was when, like, Carter was coming up and where Carter was... If he played all of his youth hockey in Florida, right, Kev? If I'm not mistaken.
Well, yeah, it was all Florida.
So when Sully was coming up in New England, the USA Hockey sanctioned team that he was on, we played half ice jamborees. You'd play 4 or 5 half ice games on a Saturday against a couple different organizations, and that was the official sort of season you had. Well, all the, I'll call them AAA programs that had the older kids, all would put teams in this makeshift division that we couldn't call ourselves, you know, the whatever our team name was. We had to call ourselves, like, we were the rink we came out. We were Ice Den. We weren't the Avalanche, right? So you bypass the rule. And we played 48 to 50 full ice games in a mite season on top of the jamborees because, to your point, Trevor, the inconsistency is there, right? USA Hockey says this, but all these New Englanders say we need to get our kids ready to play full ice hockey and make the NHL next week, so we're going to go ahead and play full ice games. I mean, my son's first year of squirts, because of the situation with him playing on two teams, he played 78 games as a 9-year-old that season.
That's
insane. We were on the ice all the time. So
did you guys keep score?
Like, oh yeah, there was playoffs, there was finals, there was trophies, there was everything. It was a full, I mean, it was a full go, you know, and which is blew my mind because then I come to Florida, his first year of peewees, and it's an 18 game season.
Yeah,
I'm like, what do I do the rest of my time?
Yeah.
Like,
what am I doing here? Aside from the tournaments,
correct.
But
yes.
Yeah, the season itself is only 18 games. Yeah.
It's the only thing that I guess say with here is that like the first few years of youth development, they don't keep official score. And that to me is like a bit of a lost opportunity. I think the importance of
that's society and everybody earns a ribbon, right? And not that I'm a fan of that. I think you're setting the youth up to just accept whatever the result is instead of fighting for the result. And I didn't get into coaching. I didn't get into any of that, but I've always been a firm believer that, you know, when you want something as an adult, you have to work hard to go get it. And, you know, if you don't get it, you don't get a ribbon for not getting it. So it's just, It's just different. And I'm not saying that my view is right and others is wrong. It's just different. But
no, there's winners and losers. That's it.
Yeah.
You got to win with grace and lose with grace. And losing builds character more than winning. If you're winning all the time, life is easy.
It's but more that, important that's not life. It's right? more important to be a better loser than it is to be a better winner. I think sometimes humbling, which I think some kids need and even some adults. But nothing's going to just be successful your whole entire life. You're going to come up against roadblocks, but that's just my kind of thought on it. I'm not behind the bench, at all with the youth, but I think it's just different now.
Well, I think you look at any pro, and they go through the span of their career, they're probably losing more than they're winning.
Are you talking about my Buffalo Sabres?
Well, that's a good segue right there.
Hold that. We're not there yet. I got one more thought on this before we get into that conversation. Is Kevin, we always talk about it. What is, when you're recruiting or scouting a player, what is the one thing you want to watch them go through when they're on the ice before you extend the offer?
Talk about your son when we were in the in Chicago for that camp and the junior team that picked him up. You know, he had a great game in game one and game two. And then the Sunday morning, I remember coming in and, you know, your lovely wife was like, it's not good today. And I go, no, this is fantastic for him because he was getting, you know, it was 4-0 or 4-1. And I go, the coach wants to see how is he going to react when he's losing, right? Like, it's all peaches and cherries and, you know, streamers when you're winning. Right. But what are you doing when you're losing? Are you going to be sitting there pouting, smacking your stick on the ice? Or are you going to be picking up your team? You know, it doesn't matter what the score is. Are you still going on out and giving full effort? Like, that's what scouts are looking at. Body language, how they're talking to the refs, how they're talking to their coaches, their teammates, the other team. Except in my, I might have had a few choice words for the other team back in the day, but you know.
I might have had a few choice words for you on skating back a couple times.
You know, stop the puck, but you know, that's a different time.
Speaking of choice words, do you guys, I'm sure, I hope you're familiar with the story where Kevin inquired to the referee about the clown car he came in on. Do you guys know this story? If not, Kevin, please indulge us.
Well, I was very respectful, and, you know, my son's in the audience right here right now, but I tried not to use any foul language on the bench because, one, I didn't want to get kicked out. Used it with the boys when the refs didn't hear. Just kidding, moms and dads out there that I coach, but no. Yeah, I mean, it was a game that I very rarely get heated with a referee, and, it, you know, his style of calling a game completely changed the outcome of the game. It was two periods of the way it was, and then... you know, decided to call it a different way. And, you know, I in a very polite way, didn't swear, didn't say anything. I was like, how many clowns fit in the car? And I started juggling. And no joke, the ref, he just kept locking eyes with me, a younger guy. And I was like, how many? I was like, and he was a younger ref in a sense, you know, and, you know, the one elderly ref, he's like looking at me, he goes, look man, you're not getting kicked out, but you should probably leave. I'm not getting kicked out and I should probably leave, eh? All right, that sounds like the circus.
Yep, sure was.
Well, some of the boys still to this day, they like that moment. That was a good bonding moment with the boys.
But it sure was. That was one of the best Kevin on the bench stories. There's a whole show's worth of Kevin on the bench stories. Wondering, all right, I'm going to go down that road before we move on. Opening, first game I've ever played on Kevin's team. My son ever played on Kevin's team. First game ever. And Kevin always coached the top team. So, and my son was a year behind. So the fact that he was playing on that team, right, that was kind of a big deal for him and, you know, kind of playing, finally made it, right? We all want to play for Coach Kevin. I don't know why, but that's what they all wanted to do. So you want to play for Coach Kevin.
Those kids.
So first game, we're in a tournament. We're down, I don't know, 5-1. We're playing up, right? We're trying to play that the division up for the tournament. We're getting just manhandled. It's like 5-1, we're losing or whatever it was. So they pull the goalie. Puck goes in. Maybe that makes it 5-1. I don't remember. Doesn't matter. Puck drops at center ice. Kid takes three strides. Puck goes in the empty net. I'm like, why don't they put the goalie back in? Like, we're losing like by 5 now, whatever. He's hot on the bench. We find out after. He looks around. And Kevin, I mean, you can tell the story way better than I can. But he looks around. He goes, who didn't put the goalie back in? MF-er, that's on me.
And then I, you know, a mirror just came in front of me, and I'm like, I'm the heady. I'm like, that's my fault. Because his son was not going to do anything that I didn't tell him not to do. So yeah,
after the game, Kevin's like, why didn't he go in the net? I go, did you tell him to go back in the net? He goes, no. I go, then he's not moving off that bench unless you tell him to go back in the net.
He was in the perch. And I'm like, you, oh, man. Oh, yeah. Yeah. The boys on the bench, the coaches, we had a chuckle with that.
Yeah. Did not help goal differential for that weekend.
So we had masks on, thankfully.
Great story. Great. So many great stories with this guy.
On the way home.
Oh, it was just like, that's so much. Oh, man.
You mentioned it before, Chris, Buffalo. I know there's a Toronto fan in the house. I mean, we all know where Kevin's allegiances lie. Trevor, you're the only outlier that hasn't spoken up yet. Where's your allegiances fall?
Calgary, buddy, and we'll just pass it on to anybody else that wants to talk.
No. I think we start with the youngest. We give them their chance. You know, Calgary, apparently you like to get kicked in the cahoosas a few times there, and you keep coming back for more. I mean, what you guys live in a suburb of Toronto. The only one that makes sense in this whole thing, go figure, is the patriarch of the family, the sane one, roots for the local team. What with the rest of you, did you guys just like pick out of a straw? Did you punch each other in the face? How'd you figure out who was rooting for who and stayed that way?
Well, honestly, I think it was with a hockey team. Dad and the coaches, we all went to see Bill Berg play for the Islanders, which...
He's a local kid.
Yeah. He's a local Beamsvillian, a fellow Leaf as well, and later on. But so we went to the Buffalo Odd. First time I ever got to pee in a cow trough, which was kind of interesting. but you know what? It was just kind of the atmosphere. And it was the first NHL game that we went to. I'm kind of glad that I never became an Islander fan, but at the same time, I'm kind of sad that I became a Sabre fan. It's been painful the last...
Till payday, buddy. You can go.
Playing the Bruins. We like playing the Bruins. I don't like the Bruins. It's just natural. I know Kevin's always nice and says, you know, you got a good team. And I'm like, I hate the Bruins still, dude. But we're rivalries, right? Like you don't love your rivalry. Like it's just not cool. And we beat the hell out of the Leafs all the time. I don't know how or why, but we just always seem to beat the Leafs steadily. And the Flames.
Appreciate that being Bruin fans because it makes us have home ice a lot of times.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Well, I would say, Chris, that you're probably on the. If they keep going in the right direction, you're probably the closest to a period of time of good hockey in front of you. You know, we know the Leafs are going to be good and then lose in the first round for the next 10 years. So that's not an issue. So sorry, Johnny, but that is not going anywhere there. And then Calgary is whatever.
Fire, buddy.
Yeah, just whatever.
That's what we wanted to hear.
You know, it's funny. We were talking about it, and here's the irony, Jeff. His oldest boy, guess what his team is.
Oh, he's the Florida fan, correct?
You got that right.
That's right.
Yeah, Austin is a Panther fan. And, you know, when that trade we were talking about, I still to this day on paper, it looked great for both teams. And hopefully maybe it does turn Huberto.
Tough couple of years. We're playing for the new rink. But, Calgary is just a team that just loves to abuse their fans. And
what are they missing? Trevor, what are they missing? GM Trevor, what do they need up there?
What do we need? We need...
goalie D forwards.
I would just say you need the players that we have to play to their potential. I think that on paper, like Calgary for a number of years has had like a really good team on paper, but they've just not, for whatever reason, been able to click. Now with Markstrom going to Jersey, our goaltending going into Wolf... I think that if Huberto can somehow show us any signs of what he did in Florida, that would be great. But no, like the first two seasons doesn't look like that's likely.
We need a lot, Jeff, and you just need a lot of we need a lot of hope.
You know, you need to bring back is Bobcat the trainer.
Oh, bloody
Jeff! I'm gonna say I think at the end of the day, there's some collusion going on in the NHL where the Florida Panthers use Buffalo and Calgary as their training grounds for winning the Stanley Cup, because there were not a lot of natural Florida players that won the Cup. There was a lot of Buffalo and a good handful of Calgary guys on that team this year. So,
you guys have a great AHL team.
Yeah, we're phenomenal.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. You know, we're going to be smashed in the mouth the next few years. So, anyway, that's what it is.
That's what the junior markets do. They get the talent out of the A, get them trained up, and then someone pays them a lot more, and off they go. You know.
You know, I like to say Buffalo and Calgary are like the Oakland Athletics of baseball.
Yep. There you go.
Bring them up. Can't pay them. Ship them out.
I know that
one franchise has a cup, though.
We're hoping Zadora adds to that legend, right?
That's right.
Good solid D right there.
So I need to give Johnny a second here.
Hey, zoom into that shirt there and show.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's the Clarence Campbell champions. That's how long? Right there.
Ten wins in this jersey, though. 10 wins, guys.
I don't know if there's other fans watching this right now. Clarence Campbell's been gone a long time.
What's that again? You're the only person we talk about every postseason that we have to throw the sentence in that, man, I feel bad for Kevin's dad.
Yeah.
Like every year. Like, what? What do you need? You've got like the superstars just in a list. You run an all-star team out there.
Yeah.
I just don't know what it, and then Kevin made this great point yesterday. The women's team, best regular season record in the PWHL, loses in the first round.
And gets to pick their opponent.
Yeah.
And loses.
Wow.
So, Johnny, what's going on in Toronto, man?
Well, you know, like, I'm not a Toronto guy, you know, but Toronto City guy, because I went to college there, so I know what it's all about. But I look at it, they got to go back to no cap.
So we don't need to fix the team. We have to change the structure of the entire league for Toronto to win. Gotcha. Okay, got it.
Hey, that's when the Leafs were the best.
I mean, hang on. They tried to do that with the COVID. They gave you a Canadian opportunity, and the Habs took you out.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, you know.
Well, all you gotta do is pretend Tavares gets hurt. Put him on the
very rich if we had that answer.
Yeah.
Just put Tavares on the IR, bring in another player, and then as soon as the playoffs start, activate him again, and then you could be $20 million over the cap and go ahead and for a playoff run.
That's it.
Toronto, can we maybe get Jeff to be part of the organization for the league? He's got some great ideas. Yeah. Now, It's really ever since they went to the cap era, it's definitely made them difficult. It made it difficult for the Leafs to
56 years, Johnny, or whatever it is.
Let's blame the structure, not the team. I love it. Well, what a mentality!
As a guy that has a team that you know was shit in the cap and non-cap era, and is still looking to have a sip out of a cup other than the toilet bowl.
Hang on, we're just going to say the cup parade is always the route in Buffalo is there at the end of October.
Yeah.
Great starts.
Yeah.
Hey, and then what happens in November?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. You know? Well, that's why I stopped screenshotting the standings in October.
So you Ontarians, and so start with the patriarch, Mitch Marner, keep him or get rid of him.
I like the kid. I think
that's you know, it. That means those of you listening. That means he wants him gone.
Yeah. No, I like him, but you know, like it's tough when you're strapped by the cap. That's why I say get rid of the cap. Keep Marner.
Got to show up in April and May.
Yeah.
Mitch Marner, super talented, amazing player. I just think from a team dynamic, it's not work, so you got to move on. Yeah. So well, somehow get something.
I think he's the whipping boy. I think he's great. Matthews is Matthews, and, you know, your SOL with Tavares' contract and age, So who do you look at next? Now, Nylander signed, so he was no longer the whipping boy.
But Nylander shows up when it counts.
Right.
And I hate to say that because I'm a big Marner fan. Great number, by the way. But, you know, he needs a different. He needs he'll go to Jersey and freaking light it up.
Yeah.
Great. Like amazing player, but just it's not working. And how many years has it been? 7 years?
So, he's a London Knight too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so, just tough because you're, you know,
that was the era.
It's a fishbowl up here.
You know, we as a Sabre fan, you know, we traded Eichel, he goes and wins the cup. We traded Sam Reinhart, goes and wins the cup. So, is it really the player?
Hey, hang on, O'Reilly.
O'Reilly gone, wins the cup. So, again, back to the breeding ground for successful players. Buffalo has done a really, really good job, and we don't have cap issues. So. But now we're out there searching for those types of players that we let go. It's a lot of things. Goaltending's huge. You know, I think Toronto's goaltending's been okay.
Defense,
very porous. I don't think trading Marner's going to fix your problem. I think give this year with this coach and then address it after that. But Marner's a superstar. I'll take him in Buffalo if you're looking to move.
Hey, they'll probably trade one of their top D for Marner.
Yeah,
no, I think Buffalo's future's bright from the deep perspective. Who knows what the goal?
They'll find
their D is solid right now.
Yeah.
They'll find a way to mess it up.
Oh yeah, 100% they will. Yep.
Right.
But that's been the issue. Is Toronto's back end has been the problem, and we're not going to get deep into like analyzing the teams, right? But Toronto's back end has been the issue. Their goaltending has not won them games. We said that in the postseason run. With Stuart Skinner for Edmonton. He hasn't really done enough to lose you games, but he hasn't done the thing to win you a game, like a Bobrovsky does or a Vasilevskiy does, or like Stuart Skinner did during that 3-game run in the finals to get them back in it.
Yeah.
So the Maple Leafs back end needs help. And then if you look at Calgary and where they are, right? Now their goalie situation is changing. Who knows what their back end is going to give them. We know they potentially have the firepower up front. Buffalo's forwards don't give you a whole lot. They're young. 5 years from now, they may be studs. We don't know where they are right now.
They don't give up on them. That's the key.
If they don't give up on them, and they can pay them, and then from our standpoint, Kevin, with the Bruins, we're just meddling again in mediocrity where we'll make the playoffs, we'll be the second or third team, we may win a playoff round, and then we'll end up throwing our freaking, you know, our Sam Adams through the TV again, all pissed off when they lose because they're not doing enough to get better. So it's we all have our individual problems. You could collectively put this together, we'd win this collection here, win the Stanley Cup every year.
Well, you guys just picked up Zadorov and Lindholm.
No, it's a good pickup there. So I look at Toronto, that series, it's a one goal difference.
Yeah.
And the difference is you had a goalie that wasn't, you know, should have, could have. That was a great comeback.
Going back to Toronto, but that's the thing, though. Like, Toronto D goalie, sure, but show up in the playoffs to score.
Yeah, you're getting paid.
If you have that much octane up front, they should be able to give you a little bit more.
At least out of the first round, second round.
In come playoff hockey, goals scored per game drop drastically.
Yeah.
The game becomes a slugfest, right? So other than Edmonton, Edmonton putting six or seven up a couple times, you win those games 3-2, 2-1. And the only reason the Bruins got by Toronto was because of Jeremy Swayman, and still not signed under contract yet. And we're in August.
Sorry, Jeff, question for you, though. Like, what do you think of Louis DeBrusk going over to, not Louis DeBrusk, what's good,
Jake DeBrusk.
Jake DeBrusk going to Vancouver.
Here's the thing with Jake. Good second line presence, PP2, would give you a little bit, would disappear for long stretches of the regular season, would go through droughts, big scoring droughts, was kind of a, I don't like to use the word diva, but definitely was somewhat of a problem year over year in the room. And maybe not with the boys, right? But with the, against the team, right? Good classmate. The teachers didn't like him, sort of mentality, right? I mean, he asked for a trade a couple years ago and whatever. Mm-hmm. So to be honest, I think that's an easy backfill. Remember, he was the only one that made it out of the 13, 14, 15 trio of first-round picks. Isn't that crazy? Now we have none. Zero left.
Showed up, you know what, though? He showed up in playoffs, though. That was his one thing with Boston, I think, that, you know, kept him in the city for as long as he did.
Correct.
But he showed up. He was a Leaf killer. I mean, he showed up against the Leafs. You know,
Well, you do know that the Leafs had the opportunity to take Swayman ahead of the goalie they picked.
Yeah.
One pick difference. There's your scouting team. So I'd be losing my mind if I'm the president saying, how did you miss the boat on that? We took, and I forget what goalie the Leafs took.
Chris Tressler.
he's still in the farm system.
Hey, they would have taken Swayman, but the salary cap was in their way, so they couldn't take him, pay him.
Sounds like the Bruins might be having that same problem.
Amen to that, brother.
The Tuukka Rask, but you guys got Raycroft. That was a Calder winner. So it was like, you had Tuukka that was, and he was known to lose his shit in the Finnish leagues. Like, he was mentally not there.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's kind of how his career ended too, though. Right?
Yeah, you know, Tuukka was a good goalie, man.
He was phenomenal.
They bet on Justin Pogge, and
Pogge was the guy for the Leafs, yeah.
Listen, a lot of people said a lot of things about Dominik Hasek and his vodka and his water bottle, and, you know, he had some moments of losing his mind, but, you know, clearly the best goalie, I think, of all time was Hasek. And
They all did. Roy, Hasek, Hextall, they're all crazy, and they were all the top of their position, right? Like, it goes without saying, and my son has come a long way, and Kevin has dealt with him. As an immature, you know, preteen going through the wins and losses and allowing goals, but there's still an edge there, and there's still that little bit of just different, you know, air quotes different, right? And you always want to treat goalies the same, and that's a big focus in USA Hockey, and something that Trevor, I would encourage you with the youth that you're dealing with, don't ignore the goalie. It sounds so like, well, why would we? But it happens all the time. Teams aren't built to put goalie coaches on the ice. Teams aren't built to – they just expect this kid to stand there and stop the puck and know how to act, and no one spends any time with them. So they're all a little different, and they're wired different, and they're wired to be independent. Yeah. And there's something about them. Tuukka Rask, Tim Thomas, right? I mean, he finally came back out of hiding, but that guy won the cup and disappeared. Like, he was gonzo for a while. So they're all just a little bit off. Sorry, Chris.
My coaches always thought it was a little odd when somebody would score on me and I would say, you're welcome.
That's how I got on the Peach Kings.
And I think that is...
Kevin wanted me to make him look good in the truck.
Yeah, he's like, oh my gosh, he can't miss.
And I think that is a great place to pull the ripcord, my friend. Kevin... Gentlemen, I appreciate you guys taking the time to sit down with us on the Tressler family summer vacation. I don't know if you're getting in the wood paneled station wagon after this and heading to Wally World or not, but I wish you all the best in what you're doing. And thank you guys for joining us in the nest today.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Cheers, bud.
Cheers, everybody.